Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of February, Anno Domini 2011, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benrick.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at just 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, things to choose, nothing to lose. We'll start with the news.
That works.
In a moment.
Or any other alliterative name you can think of.
Exactly. My hands were suddenly, I just washed them, can't do a thing with them. The American Civil Liberties Union has taken up the cause of a Maryland man who was forced to cough up his Facebook password during a job interview with the Department of Corrections in that state. According to the ACLU letter sent to the Maryland Department of Corrections, the organization requires that new applicants and those applying for recertifications give the government their social media account usernames and personal passwords for use in employee background checks. The ACLU calls this policy a frightening and illegal invasion of privacy. Keep in mind that this isn't looking at what you posted in a public Twitter account. The government agency here could look through private Facebook messages, which seems a lot like reading through your mail, paper, or digital. The case also shows a downside to Facebook's scale. It stands to reason that the bigger they get, the more that employees and others concerned with the age-old enterprise of covering their asses will feel the need to know that their employees are up, what their employees are up to on the service. That alone isn't going to derail the Facebook juggernaut, but it might slow down people's engagement on the site as they realize maybe a private unknown email account is a better way of sending sensitive messages. In fact, after the ACLU got involved, the American Department of Public Safety and Correction Services has suspended the practice of asking for Facebook login information for 45 days. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is a very simple one. The question is, should employers be allowed to ask for your Facebook login and password? The choices are, of course, they're going to hire you. They have no right to any of my private information. And who keeps private stuff in Facebook? I mean, seriously.
Scary, but
even if you think
folks.
You are, you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so far we've got 44 people who are following the American they have no right thing. And, of course, when you're done with that, well, I know you'll have more to say about this because I know you people. All you have to do is head on over to check the little yellow box underneath the poll. Click on the link. Give us your opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And the question there, the opinion question is, how do you feel about employers asking for your Facebook login and password? And we've already got a bunch of people who really have something to say. And, of course, that's our question to you. How do you feel about employers asking for your Facebook login and password? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I didn't know how to spell it, but he's calling from Punxsutawney.
Excellent.
Punxsutawney.
Just like Carl did from Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Carl, have you seen your shadow? Carl, are you there?
Well, Dave's got to push the button.
Push the button, Dave.
Oh. Yeah, I did.
Carl, are you there?
I am here.
First, how do you spell Punxsutawney?
Actually, it's Pottstown.
Oh, it's Pottstown.
I thought you said Punxsutawney.
He tells me Punxsutawney.
Oh, I'm trying to do that and get your bell sound in. And
Pottstown. You called before.
Yes.
Yes, you have. Sorry
about that. Sorry about that one. I'm sure Punxsutawney is a great place to live. Anybody that's there.
I'm sure it is. What can we do for you, Carl?
Not bad.
Well, I have a question about burning CDRs. Every once in a while, I will download a radio program such as your own, and it'll be too large to fit on a disc. However, I'd like to burn it to several discs. I use the Windows Media Player as my burning software, so I put a disc in after I download the file, and I tried to burn it using Windows Media Player. It just gives me an error message saying that the file is too large to burn to the disc and will not let me proceed. What I'd like it to do is give me the option of inserting one disc after another until the entire program is recorded onto several discs, but it won't give me that option. I'm wondering if there's a way to make it give me that option.
No, Windows Media Player doesn't do that. What you need to do is open the file in an MP3 editor like Audacity and split it up into multiple pieces. The other thing you can do is instead of making an audio disc, which is limited to 70 minutes of audio, you can make a MP3 disc. A lot of the newer audio CD players can also play MP3 discs. And with an MP3 disc, you can get like 10 hours of audio on a single disc.
Okay. And if you have time, that brings me to one more question. I can save the file using iTunes as an MP3 file, or I could save it as a standard WAV file. But then when it comes to burning the CD, I could burn the CD as either a standard Redbook standard CD or an MP3 CD. Now, if I both encode the file when I'm saving it as MP3 and I burn the disc as an MP3 disc, does that mean I'm actually encoding it twice or not?
Generally, yeah. The files originally start out as MP3, so you don't need to re-encode them at all. An audio CD, again, uses a different format called AIF. So your audio CD burner, Windows Media Player software, has to convert the MP3 into an AIF to fit on an audio CD. But if you're just copying the MP3 and burning it to a disk, it won't have to re-encode it. And someone in the chat room or later call may be able to tell us of another program that will span.
I think Roxio will do that.
Yeah, Roxio Toast will do it for files on a Mac. And Easy CD Creator for Windows. If you have a gig worth of files, it will let you split it among multiple CDs. I don't know if it will split a single file among multiple CDs and keep it readable.
I think it does, but
We'll Google around. So Roxio's Easy CD Creator. The other CD burning software is Nero. Nero, what's the name of their program? The Nero software.
Nero
burning
CD
something.
CD burning
other, yeah.
software.
So that may also let you split single MP3 files across multiple audio discs.
So you might try either of those, but generally one of those comes with your a lot of places who sell systems include a 90-day free trial of either Roxio or Nero.
Yeah, Nero usually creator. Comes with any standard. It's a good version. With any CD I shouldn't say CD-ROM drive. They're all DVDs now. They come standard. Anything that I get always comes with
a lot
CD
of times
for Nero.
With the big box CD or computer builds, they're just leaving the Windows burning software built in.
Which, oh, stinks.
It doesn't have as many options as some of the other programs do.
Mm-hmm. This is an old computer. It's about 4 years old. It did come with a version of Roxio, and I still have the original disk for that. Of course, it would have to be updated.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, the other question is, does the player in which you want to play this actually play MP3 CDs?
It does.
Well, you'll find that if it's a radio show like ours, MP3 is perfectly acceptable for the quality because you don't have very high-end music on our particular show. It's all voices. So for those, MP3, even though you're kind of double encoding it, but not quite, but sort of. For that, it's fine. For music, of course, if you start out with a WAV file or some other uncompressed format, then, moving it to MP3 will certainly lose you the highs and lows and a lot of the harmonics. But for voice, no.
And that's one reason Apple shifted to AAC, the Advanced Audio Codec, from Dolby Labs, which is now the standard encoding format for iTunes. It's higher quality than MP3, but about the same file size as MP3. But MP3 is the more generic standard across more devices.
Right.
I mean, we could always look in the library, see if they have any music that would fit computer talk, have it in the background. But.
Sure. Is that, does any of that make sense, Carl?
Yes, it does. I want to thank you very much for the advice.
Thank you.
Good luck. Stay warm.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yep.
All right. Sorry, I'm quietly trying to fix my computer here as we talk.
And I'm finding a lot of hits, programs that will span data disks, but a single audio file that doesn't fit on a single disk seems to be hard to find an answer to because it's lost among all the other. Well, yeah, just use Nero because it splits it across disk. No, what? I have one file that's too big to fit on a single disk.
On a CD? How many? You can do audio to a DVD, and most laptops nowadays have DVD in them.
But if he's burning a CD, he's probably playing it on a CD player in maybe a car or something.
Right? Maybe in his car.
It's more likely that player would read an MP3 CD than it would a DVD audio CD.
Oh, one thing that I picked up a little gadget at Walmart. Yeah, I love to have my iTouch in the car because I can sit there and load all my tunes in it, and having that long cord, you know, dangling all over the place.
Sure.
A pain in the butt. You know, like your little mouse there, that retractable? I found a retractable small jack, mini jack for my for the car.
Nice.
So I plug it in the aux, and you can just stretch it out, and it stretches just like that little mouse of yours out about 3 feet.
Nice.
So it'll work good there, plus on the motorcycle, because I like to put my XM radio on the bike. And again, I've got all these stupid, you know, this long cord. Because they don't make, I've tried to find an 18-inch cable.
Right.
No, you can buy 12s, and you put two 12s together.
Now it's 24, which is an 18.
Which is too long. So I got this retractable. I'm like, sweet, I can just bunch, you know, use these tie wraps I gave you.
Yep.
And put those on there. Nice and tight, smooth. It works. I love that little gadget.
It kind of angers me, frankly. I have a Nissan Cube, which I truly, truly love. What a great, great car. But there's a jack for an iPhone, anything, right? So I can play music in the car.
Yeah.
Well, first, I'm an Android guy, so that kind of ports me off. But more importantly, actually, is the fact that it doesn't charge it.
Is it a USB jack or mini stereo jack or an actual iPod?
It's an iPod
docking connector.
Docking connector, and it doesn't charge the device, the iPhone or iTouch or whatever.
That's just one more wire they could have connected.
Well, and that's my point. So when I'm taking an 11.5-hour trip to pick up my daughter from college, I run out of music. So now I have to plug it into the cigarette lighter and use the aux jack.
Mm-hmm.
Which I can do. I mean, it's not a problem. It's why do they give me this thing that I simply, truly can't use?
Is it supposed to be able to charge it?
No!
It
No, in fact, the first time I read it, I thought, oh, it's broken.
It's broken, yeah.
So I looked in the manual to see, you know, what I do, where I take it. I know, I looked at that.
You actually looked at it? You broke the cellophane on it?
I know, I did. I broke the cellophane.
Whoa.
Well, I had to set the clock in the car when I bought it anyway, so.
Wait a minute. Be still my heart.
I know, no kidding.
I mean, this is two weeks.
This is
3 weeks in a row right now with the solar panel.
I know it.
And I keep going back. I'm sorry. That came up. We were talking with some folks. And they go, they didn't quite hear. They go, did Nick say what I think he said? And I couldn't keep a damn straight face. He goes, what did he say? I said, it's not a bald spot. It's a solar panel for a sex machine.
He's still going off on it. All right.
I think it's great. That's what I told my brother. Because he's only got more hair than him anyways.
Right.
And the same thing for him. No, it's not a bald spot.
Here's an app you should download for your iPod.
Yeah.
It's the Nissan Cube Accessorizer.
Oh, the Accessorizer.
Yeah.
So I can add all the
accessorize.
I could have gotten a spoiler for the back end under the mistaken assumption that my car would go fast enough for a spoiler to matter.
No, it actually raises your insurance because now it has a spoiler.
You're right.
No, you just need a big key.
I love that. I used to have one for my Volkswagen.
Yeah, and spins around.
I used to have one for my Volkswagen. I did, and I loved it.
A friend of mine has a little Mini Cooper.
Do you know my Cube has the same wheelbase as a Mini Cooper?
Really?
Yeah.
But it's twice as tall.
It is twice as tall. That's a problem. I don't take turns at 80 anymore. Ever. Never have. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. If any officers are listening, I've never taken a turn at 80 miles an hour. Sorry, you were saying about the Mini Cooper.
Those are cool little cars. Cute. Yeah, I'll put a big key on that, too. It'll look great.
Yep. I like the Mini Cooper. I fit in my Cube.
Well, this may be the problem. Older iPods charged on the FireWire pin, because they all started out as FireWire. And then for a few generations, they were USB or FireWire. Now they're USB only. So I bet your Cube is a FireWire charger.
No, it says it simply doesn't charge them.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it says it does not charge.
We have an adapter that swaps those two pins, so you can use newer phones with older docks.
Oh, that would.
That's actually very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll actually look again in the thing and see if it.
I wonder if Radio Shack would have something. Well, they don't have cassette. Because you used to be able to.
He's got an aux jack, so you can do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And yeah, I do it off the aux jack. Actually, I do that with my Android phone. I can put
again. That's one thing.
A lot of music in that as I can.
Yeah.
That's one thing I was glad I did on my car. Talking about having this difference is put the XM radio in it.
Oh, yeah.
That was one feature I wanted. That and my sunroof, and definitely two. I was very glad that I got.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have liked, sunroof would have been interesting. The one thing I really wish I had was one of those automatic mirrors, you know, that auto-dim when somebody, that would have been nice. I don't have that. All right, we are going to take a quick break. So if you're on the line, Bodan, stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Bodan from Rochester, who is patiently waiting on the line. And you, it is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And I should remind folks, remember, besides being able to email us and, you know, the various ways that you can do it, call in and that. We also offer texting. If you dial us at 585-209-9010, we can also take your questions over your phone. So just another vehicle to do it.
Sure, exactly. And you can, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Bodan did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question? Bodan, push
Saturday
the button.
Afternoon.
Sorry, you have to start again. Dave forgot the button again.
I said, good afternoon, gentlemen. You guys sound like you're having way too much fun today.
We do have fun here.
Anyway, I've got a question about Opera.
Opera?
Opera. Now, I do use Firefox as my primary web browser, but I just wanted to find out.
I was all set to talk about Don Giovanni. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
No. But one of my colleagues at work is a big fan of Opera and suggested I download it and try it. But before doing that, I thought I would just check with the gurus of computer and to see if either three of you have ever used the web browser Opera and to see if what the positive opinion is and if there's a negative one.
I have used it. How about you guys?
Same here. Yeah. I've used it and like it.
Yeah, it's a nice browser. Not my favorite, but it's a very nice browser.
Opera Mini is used in a lot of smartphones as well.
Yep.
Okay.
So you may already have used it and not known it.
Alrighty. But how would it compare to, let's say, Firefox? Or I know, Nick, you are a big fan of Chrome.
Yeah, I am. I don't like it as much. The newest version is supposed to be very, very, very fast.
Okay.
Which I have not yet used. I've been on other things, haven't had a chance to try it.
One of the comments that one of my colleagues made, saying if when you download the Google Chrome, it comes with a lot of stuff that Google wants you to have, like the Google browser and the other stuff that Google wants to push with the web browser.
Yeah, but a lot of them, you can sit there and opt out of them.
Yeah, that's true of the Windows version, it is. And like Dave said, when you're installing it, you can opt out of all that. So you just have to pay attention.
Yeah, right there. You just said the key word, have to pay attention. Because folks will sit there and just go click, 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 and then all of a sudden they've got these extra toolbars and this other stuff that they didn't want.
I hate that McAfee Smart Scan that keeps downloading. Mm-hmm. I've already got antivirus in. I don't need you to.
Yeah. One reason why I'm considering is, I mean, for example, when you click on, well, there's pop-ups and there's pop-unders, and apparently if you use Opera, this is what I'm told, some of the pop-up and pop-unders don't really work that well. They're not made to work with Opera because it's such a, you know, less used browser maybe.
And that was one of the early advantages of Firefox, is a lot of the bad things didn't work in Firefox because it was unknown, and now that's also one of the advantages of Chrome is it's less known. But Opera's got a huge vocal community behind it that really keeps it running.
Well, I think I will experiment this afternoon and download it. And when we're flipping pancakes in a couple of weeks, I'll give you my opinion on it.
Excellent.
Another one to try is OmniWeb from Omni Group.
I'm sensing that you will indeed be joining us.
Oh yes, I've invited two of my friends to come along and join me, so it'll be a party of three musketeers.
Excellent, thank you. I don't know if you're Athos, Porthos, or Aramis, but thank you very much.
Alrighty, gentlemen. See you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Bodan. And for those of you who don't know what he's talking about, on March 12th, we have an event. It's a very interesting event, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're having, it's going to be a pancake breakfast. It's going
food
to be here in the cafeteria at Greece Olympia High School. It's going to be a mere $5 a person. For that $5, you get all the pancakes, juice, sausages you want. You will have the 10 to 1. From 10 to 12, it's live polka show. From 12 to 2, although we're only serving till 1, from 12 to 2, right, it's Sound Bites live. And so we can sit and chit-chat. We'll be flipping pancakes.
All right, how much is this going to cost me, though?
Well, now, you would think you would pay $19.95.
At least.
But wait, there's more.
If you call now, you get it for the low, low price of $5 a person. And all your children 5 and under are free. Ooh. All you have to do is give us a call. You can call during the week to the regular number, or you can do it right online at jazz901.org. When you do, by the way, tell them or indicate on the form online that it's for Sound Bites. Yep. Because we have a little bit of a
competition
going with our friends from the Polka Show before ours. So far, they're
kicking our butt,
handing us our posteriors. So we would love it if you would sign up, say it's for Sound Bites, and join us on March 12th.
But you know what? I heard even one other great thing that's going to happen.
No, what could that possibly be?
Laurel Ann has gone out there, which, you know, she does a stellar job when she puts these events on for us. You know, we can't say enough about her.
We can't. She's wonderful.
We love her. And but she's going to have some stuff to give away. So not only are you going to get the entertainment, the food, we're going to have some giveaways. So, you know, it's something you don't want to miss out on.
Wow.
Definitely want to be there.
All right, on to our next caller, and that would be Dar. And Dar is calling, I suppose, from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dar. What's your question?
Howdy. It's just a comment for Bohdan about the Opera there.
Yep.
I've been using it since you had to pay for it or endure their ads.
You're right.
Wow.
And
whoa,
the thing rocks. The only, and using, I've been using it in Linux for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great features of somebody's got a netbook is the fit to width little bar at the bottom, where you can actually zoom in and zoom out with for text size with the center thingy there on your mouse.
Yeah.
You can click show images, cache images, or no images.
Nice.
So if a page doesn't want to load properly or quickly enough because the scripting's sloppy, you click that and you're off. There's only one drawback, and that is, again, certain web pages, they use so many resources.
Yeah.
You can see the system monitor just go berserk.
Yeah.
So then you click over, and okay, the best thing is when you right-click anywhere on the screen on a web page, fourth from the bottom, open with, you can open that lousy scripted page with Google Chrome or Epiphany or Firefox or whatever you want.
Nice.
It's just such a joy that, but you never, ever, when you have an update, never download, as you guys know, let's say 11.0.
Right, right.
You wait a couple of weeks.
Yep, absolutely right. Words of wisdom from Nard. Don't, you know, Adam Osborne used to say it best. The pioneers are the guys with the arrows in their backs.
If you had to compare Opera and Firefox, Opera is like the Polish people. It's fun. It's not moody. It doesn't use up a lot of resources. It doesn't seize up. And Firefox is like Ukrainians. They cry in their beer. They're always complaining. A lot of sometimes they're fun, but not. Speaking as a Ukrainian, okay?
You are a Ukrainian.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Dara, I'm not entirely certain you're not getting us into trouble here, but thank you so much for your call.
Well, the polka guys are really going to hate you now.
Yeah.
No, we're sending them up to you.
Oh, okay.
Get ready. They're coming.
They're coming.
They will come in for us. Have a good one.
Okay, bye.
Have a great week, Dar. She's very funny. We love Dar. We apologize to all the Ukrainian and Polish individuals or of Ukrainian or Polish descent. We look forward to your emails. In the meantime, we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Chris from Gates, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. Just want to pick your brains here. I loaded my, I connected my iPad, and one of the things it asked me was import my pictures and video, and it gives you a bunch of choices like use Windows, Windows Live, Photo Gallery, Corel, HP Media Smart. I mean, I really have no idea what is where the best place I should go. I haven't really done it before, so I thought I'd find out from you guys what you would recommend.
Where do you store your photos now?
I usually just have I usually put them on a CD from Kodak, and they go to a Kodak file somewhere on my computer.
Oh, so you're not sharing your files on the internet?
No, not sharing at all, no.
Okay. You can set the iPad to read from any folder of photos that you want from any of the different programs that you mentioned. So if you're not running any of those programs, then you just ignore that option. And you pick the folder your folders are in.
Okay, so those options are if I wanted to share, is that it?
Right, if you already were using one of those programs to keep track of all your photos, then the iPad would connect to it to upload to the iPad all its photos.
Now, Kodak has their EasyShare software.
Right. If you're not using any of those programs, just say none of them and pick your own folder where you normally keep all your photos.
Well, would you guys recommend one of those? I mean, I just got a new SLR Nikon D90, so I am taking a lot more pictures, and I don't really have any organization structure per se, except, like I say, if I put them on a disk. Right.
Nikon comes with their own program called Nikon View.
Right.
Google Picasa is popular because it also does web editing, so you can edit your photos as well as upload them to the Picasa website. Most of the programs are designed to organize and share your photos on the web. Kodak EasyShare has the Ophoto service. There's Shutterfly. There's Flickr. So you can get an organizational tool that also has web sharing if you also want to put it to the web. Commercially, Adobe Photoshop Album is common for organizing and managing photos. But doesn't Windows itself have a photo organizer built in? I know Apple ships with iPhoto on the Mac OS, but most of the time, from what we see, people generally just put them in their own folders their own way.
Right. So whichever one you want to use is fine, or you can just do it yourself.
Okay, thanks, guys.
There you go.
Yeah, a lot of people end up using the one that came with their camera. So the Nikon software, the Kodak software, the Canon software. And just use whatever one came with their camera. But quite often, the competing camera softwares don't like talking to each other. So if you end up with a Kodak camera and a Canon software, a Canon camera, it's common to use a different type of management program like Google Picasa or the Windows Live Photo Gallery. That was the one that she mentioned as well. That's Microsoft's photo management tool that also lets you publish to Windows Live on the internet so you can let other people share it.
One thing you should really remember is if you are taking a lot of photos and they're important to you, back them up. Because I can't tell you the tales of woe I hear from people all the time. Oh, my God, my only copy of my child's graduation photos are lost. This disk died or this hard drive died or this thumb drive died. Multiple backups are the way to go. Loading them up online to one of those photo sites is never a bad idea. The more places you have them, the less chances you'll lose them. So,
although one of the things to keep in mind is that most of the time when you publish your photos to a website, they send low resolution versions to view on the web. You have to make sure you check if available for that service, high resolution versions.
Right.
I know with Apple's Mobile Me Gallery, you can choose to send high resolution versions for print. If you will click a checkbox when you're uploading it, so people who are viewing your website can also download printable versions. You need the high-res version to be able to print.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Zach from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Zach. What's your question?
Hi, my question is about an optional update that Microsoft is offering. It's the SQL Server 2008 Service Pack 2. And what is SQL Server? And do I want to? It's a big update. Do I really need it?
Do you run? If you have to ask what SQL Server is, you're probably not running it.
That's true.
safe to say.
SQL is it stands for Structured Query Language. It's a way to query data in a database.
Uh-huh.
It was IBM's big innovation back in the 60s for databases. And the basic idea is that, for example, if you're running a website, a lot of the data that you have on that website are saved in a database.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be on a Windows machine. That would probably be under SQL Server. Under a Linux server, that would probably be under MySQL. But it's basically a database. And if you're not using it, you certainly don't need the update.
Okay.
On the other hand, if it's giving you the update,
right,
it may be that you've got a version loaded, or it may just want to download the. It may just want to download the update. I don't know. But if you're not doing, if you don't have the SQL Server running, and you would know that by looking through your programs.
Okay.
Right, it would tell you whether or not SQL Server is loaded. If it is, and you're not using it for anything, you can get rid of it. But before you do that, make sure you're not using it for anything.
I wonder if the Windows photo management program stores it in a SQL database.
It might. Mm-hmm. So you want to be sure that you're not using anything that requires it.
Okay.
It's certainly...
even address book might... use the SQL Manager,
It might, but I
typically, a small database.
Yeah, it's Windows. It's anything's Windows. Yeah. Anything's possible.
You wouldn't need a big SQL Server for a small database. But the Mac comes with MySQL, which is a personal.
But
version
we're talking
of the SQL
Microsoft,
database.
Though, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they just throw everything at you.
Yeah. Whether you want it or not.
.net. How many times do I have to uncheck .net?
Yeah,
and then some stupid program says you must have .net.
Well, that's
I have plenty of room on the hard drive, so I can certainly update it without any problem. That'd be okay.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft, has no consideration for how large your hard drive is or anything else. They just want everything they want.
Mm-hmm.
It's theirs.
Are you running a web server at all?
No, not at all.
Because most of those will attach to the database server also.
Yeah, maybe they just like me. They're being in a generous mood.
It may well be.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. And that's true because SQL Server is a four-cost program, and they are very proud of it considering what they charge for it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not, why not? Join in the fun. Back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
If your walls...
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have our friend Linda from Greece on the line. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Okay, one quick question. I bought a ticket last week. When are they going to mail them out?
The breakfast.
I don't know that they are mailing them out.
I think it's too late for mail. I think it's
It'll be waiting for you at the door. Just bring ID.
Well, I ordered it about a week ago.
Well, then just call the station. I mean,
yeah. Unfortunately, we wouldn't know the answer to that.
We're
not paying attention.
Another question: AVG Internet Security.
Yeah.
Okay, I like it. The only thing is, it says it opens up a window and it says, "Would you like this person to get on your computer?" Sometimes I don't recognize the name. What do I do? You know, like it's AG Core or something or other, and I think to myself, now can I or can I not do this? So, but I like it though. That's the only problem I'm having.
And that's common with any firewall program, that it warns you when something is trying to get from your computer to the internet, or something from the internet is trying to get into your computer. Generally, what you do is, if you don't recognize that program name, is Google it and see what it is, because sometimes it's part of a program you are using. One of the classic examples was Microsoft Outlook Express, an email program. The actual name of the file was MSIMN, Microsoft Internet Mail and News.
Right.
.exe. And so the firewall would pop up and said, this IMN wants to get to the internet. And people said, no. And then their email quit working.
Right.
So generally, Google whatever the name of that program is, and it should tell you what it is or not, to let you know if that's something that does need to get out or not.
Yeah, it seems to be benign, but I don't see it saying what it is. Oh, it's part of Silverlight.
So now, is that good, or should I just stick with the regular AVG and not even bother with the internet security? I mean, I got a 30-day trial, and I thought I'd try it out. But or should I just stick with the guy's stuff you would recommend and don't even bother with that?
Well, AVG in and of itself is a very, very good program. So if you're not having troubles with it, then you're fine. Stick with it.
Yeah, if it's not broken, why fix
it? And you should be running a firewall. Windows has its own firewall built in, as does the Mac and Unix. And most people just set it to never ask you. Just block attempts without bothering to ask you. And then you run into a problem when your program doesn't work. So in your this specific case now with Silverlight, that's a Microsoft sort of media animation program on the web, so that you try to look at a video on the web and it may not work because it's been blocked by your firewall. Do you have your own network router?
Yes, I do. I have a Linksys router.
Okay, that gives you an inbound firewall that's usually enough protection for most users. What the internet security or zone alarm or other firewalls on your computer generally help prevent outbound access, so that if you happen to get infected by something, it can't get back out to the internet. So generally what we see is like 99% of all of those firewall requests are for legitimate programs.
Okay.
So most people just turn off the warning or look up what that program is to make sure it's something that's good or not.
But AG Core is part of Silverlight, which is part of your operating system for Microsoft. So you should allow that.
Okay, so basically, before I do anything, just minimize it and go to Google to see if it's okay before I do anything.
You got it.
So you would recommend then that, because I've got 15 more days, you would recommend me purchasing this because, you know, I'm kind of a novice at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay, thank you very much,
Taylor. Have a good one.
Thank you, Linda.
And just as an FYI, the folks in the IRC chat can't complain this week because I did remember to wear my hat, so the lights won't be blinding them. Now it's just his solar panel that we gotta worry about.
AG is the periodic symbol for silver, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Silver
Core.
Oh, I got it.
Very good. Ooh.
What was the other bad pun this week? Oh, on Two and a Half Men, there's been this recurring a plot line where Rose fake got married to make Charlie jealous, and she's got this mannequin that was standing up in the church and sits in the house, and his name is Manny Quinn.
There you go.
And Charlie hasn't gotten it yet. In fact, this last episode...
Well, he's not going to have a lot of chance to get it anymore.
This last episode, he found the mannequin in the closet, and Rose says her husband works in the fashion industry, so he just thought it was a mannequin.
Yeah, you're going to have to get him to spell this name, but he is calling from New Hampshire.
Jim, where are you calling from?
Nashua, New Hampshire.
Nashua.
Nashua.
I've never heard of it.
N-A-S-H-U-A.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Mac Connection Warehouse used to be in Nashua. We used to order stuff from them all the time because it was a one-day UPS shipment to Rochester.
Yep. How are things in Nashua, New Hampshire these days?
Where is it?
Kind of cold. We're down by the Massachusetts border. We're about an hour away from Boston.
Okay. Gotcha.
Nice little place. I've been there.
Nashua. There was also Nashua. What was their software? I think it became PowerPoint.
I don't know.
Before Microsoft bought them. I'm gonna look that up now. He's all these old words. Up. Yeah.
Okay. So, Jim, what can we do for you all the way in Nashua, snowbound as you are?
Yeah, we got more snow than ice, too. Wait, so.
Before we get to this question, the bigger question for us to him, how'd you find out about us? Which I'm kind of glad that you did.
I've called before.
He's called before.
Oh, but I still haven't heard how he found out about us. I'm just curious.
I've known about you guys for years.
Sweet. Pass the word on, please.
I used to live in Manchester.
He's an expat. He's an expatriate from Rochester.
Ah, okay. Now
I'm passing the word on. Everybody says
super. Thank you, sir.
We'd like to hear, Jim. What can we do for
you? Yes. Thank you.
My problem deals with Phoenix Viewer and Linux.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I downloaded it, but it won't. I've expanded it. I click on it. I get what's inside of it. I can't seem to get Phoenix Viewer to work on Linux, either in OpenSUSE or Mandriva, which is RPM.
Okay, when you double-click, it comes down as a tar.gz file, right?
Yeah.
And you double-click on it, that opens it up in the Archive Manager.
Right, I have it expanded.
Right, so you then just drag that top folder, Phoenix dash whatever the number is, out onto your, I don't care, desktop or some other folder, wherever you want it to be. And then, so now you have a folder somewhere on your system called Phoenix dash whatever the number is.
Right.
Okay. If you double click that, it opens up. You see a whole lot of files.
Right.
The one you want to double click on to run it is called Snow Globe.
Oh, okay.
The reason is that Phoenix is a derivative of the Snow Globe viewer.
Oh, all right, because the instructions that comes with it says to use run, space, period, forward slash, second life. That doesn't work either. I tried that in a terminal.
Right. And that likely won't necessarily work, but if you double-click on Snow Globe, it should open right up.
Okay, because when I couldn't find my avatar name and stuff, I misplaced it. I found it. But I went through Windows again to download the new viewer. It only has one name. And Phoenix has two names, the first and last. The one name wouldn't even work on the Phoenix viewer either.
Right.
Second Life recently implemented a single name only ability, and the viewers have to be updated to recognize.
Yeah, the Phoenix viewer is a very good one. That one.
I think you can just put in the first name and you're good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah, some of the older browsers or older viewers.
Tell you what, the best thing to do is in the Phoenix viewer, they have a whole user group within the group, and you can sign up for them. And they've got so much. I've learned more things that you can set in that viewer to change stuff. You know, like now they've got the draw distance and everything else, and different features that they're trying to put into the Phoenix viewer to make it easier for the folks to use. But all you got to do is just pop the question in the Phoenix user group, and somebody will come back with an answer. They're fantastic there. I mean, it's one of the best support groups there because they want this viewer to stick around because they're not satisfied with the Second Life viewer. The Second Life viewer, again, I don't know what drugs they were on when they adopted it, but more folks hate using that because of the things they did, and they claim they asked, you know, different people and all that, but I don't know what people they asked because it's not conducive to the older viewers.
Yeah, I agree with you there because when I was at Second Life, I had my netbook with Windows 7 on it, and I got to, you know, the Windows viewer for the Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Says, well, I have to update it. It updated like three times, so the most recent one, period.
Mm-hmm.
My system crashed.
Yep.
It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And that was on Windows.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, the other thing you might try on Phoenix is put in your username as your first name and put resident as your last name and see if that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I got my avatar name is Jim Dreadmore. You've seen me there before.
Right. Okay. Oh, Jim. Yeah.
That's why I haven't been yet because I can't get it to work on Linux.
Right. Use Jim Dreadmore as your first name and resident as your last name.
Okay.
Try that.
Well, so I found that stuff there not because of my password. I needed my password too. So.
Well, you're on your own for that.
Well, I found all that. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good.
I just can't get it to work on Linux. So,
well, but like I said, try resident as the last name.
The personal last name is fine now.
Okay, good.
I found that information. Now try Snow Globe, and I'll see what happens.
Excellent. Let us know.
Yeah, please.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
A lot of different viewers available.
There are a lot of different viewers available. There's a whole list on the Second Life Wiki of the official ones, the ones that it knows works. But there are a lot of others as well. There's... InWorlds has its own viewer now. The OpenSim series of worlds have their own.
Now, is the Open Viewer, the other world, is that gaining any popularity? I haven't been
there
over
are,
that side.
There are about 10,000 new
worlds.
InWorlds is very popular right now.
It's super cheap.
Well, that's one of the reasons it's very popular. They don't have voice yet. I don't think they finished making a deal with Vivox or any one of those yet, but... it doesn't have voice, but it has everything else. One of the other interesting worlds is the OpenSim or OS Grid world, OpenSim Grid.
Now, when you get a full sim, how many prims are you getting with?
30,000 or 40,000.
Get out.
An entire island is $75 a month right now. This is in world.
Yeah.
$75 a month. I forget if it's 30 or 40. I think it's 30,000 prims for the first three islands you buy. When you buy a fourth, you get 40,000 on all of them.
Okay.
So I think 30,000 is still twice what you get in Second Life.
And I also heard that there's a utility now that you can download all your inventory from Second Life.
There is. It's called Stored Inventory.
And
it works only on Windows.
And move it over to InWorld.
Any one of them.
And supposedly, like the programs like Sculpted Studio that I use...
Mm-hmm.
It'll still work. I haven't talked to the black box about it yet.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming it would because, you know, the more places he can sell his product, the more
he's
going to like it.
And really, except for voice, it's pretty much done. It's still a new world. It's still in beta test.
Yeah.
But it works really well, and pretty nice.
My only... apprehension there is, you know, how much is it going to, you know, right now it's a great deal, but then all of a sudden become like another Second Life that, you know, all of a sudden they're starting to charge and do this and
ding
that.
Nobody knows yet. And so a lot of people are holding off, but
it's
a lot
fun
of people
to check
are there.
Out.
It's getting to be fairly huge, as a matter of fact. Part of my master's, which, by the way, for those of you out there, I just successfully defended my master's, so I'm very excited about that. Part of that was a look at a lot of the virtual worlds, and I've got a thank you.
He moved some buttons around on me.
Thank you. I will take that.
It was a long time coming, and all we can say is, when's the party?
Yeah, no kidding. A bunch of different virtual worlds are out there. Next Island, Onverse, In Worlds, Exit Reality, Blue Mars. There's just a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them that are specifically education-focused.
We should maybe explain to some of our other listeners that don't have a frapping clue of what the heck we're talking about.
Virtual worlds are worlds that you can get involved in that actually only exist in the computer. The graphical ones, like Second Life, you log in with a special viewer, and you see whatever's been built there, and people have avatars. They can be human-looking avatars, animal-looking avatars, or just anything people want to make. And you interact with people in the world. You can type to them. You can talk to them. You can do whatever.
Talk literally around the world.
Yeah, around the world to people. It's pretty amazing, actually, and it's a very neat thing. There are a lot of them. Second Life is the most well-known commercial one. There is also the OpenSim Grid, which is you could actually set up your own Open Grid server. OS Grid OpenSim, it's called OpenSim Grid. You're an OpenSim server and create your own world and connect it to this grid, and people would be able to join into your world and do whatever you want to do, and that'll just cost whatever it costs you to have a server online, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing. There's an astonishing amount of stuff in there. Some really wild stuff, some really terrific stuff, a lot of very nice educational stuff. And we meet there. We meet in Second Life every Friday night, 6 o'clock Linden time, which is Pacific time, so it's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and we meet every Friday and essentially do this: talk to people in Second Life about computers, and we have a great time. We had a great time last night. Want to thank Bon Vibra Gans for providing some space for us to work in. We were on the FLCC island for a very long time and loved it. But Dave has been unavailable the last few Fridays. He's the only one who can control the land. So,
and I still don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't get that either. But so Bonnie has been kind enough to give us land in his area, and he's there to control that. So we've been happy to be there. Listen, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second wasted hour of your Saturday with Soundbites.
And that was the infamous Hairy Leg. You've got to put a plug in for him every so often.
It was Hairy Leg. And listen, Dave told you about being able to text in questions to us.
Yeah.
We also have our own service here at Soundbites. If we use a three-letter acronym, a TLA.
Oh, and what will that stand for?
That you don't understand, right? A TLA stands for three-letter acronym. If we use an acronym that you don't understand, like SATA or PATA or ESATA, as we were using them last night.
The old SCSI.
Right, SCSI, all of those things like that. We have our own autoresponder at 585-348-8255. That's 585-348-8255. And you can type, you can send it a text, and the text would say define, space, and then the acronym that you want to find, and it'll send you back all the acronyms it knows for that TLA.
Whoa.
All the phrases it knows for that TLA. You can also send it weather, and it'll give you the weather in Rochester, New York. You can send it stock, space, and a symbol, and it'll send you back the latest trade price, delayed 20 minutes, of course, or today it would give you yesterday's final closing price for that stock. And you can also type the word help, and it'll send you.
I wonder if it knows some of my acronyms.
Nobody knows any of your acronyms.
RTFM?
It knows RTFM.
I got a t-shirt that says that.
Except it knows the real acronym for that. Exactly. But that's at 585-348.
I have to check some of my other ones out there, folks.
Read the friendly manual.
Yeah. Read the manual first.
I got the one tattoo I have that I wound up putting Alec-a-poop instead of what I wanted to put on there. which
maybe you shouldn't say it on the air.
Just initials, FM.
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 Fully Magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly right.
Frequency modulation.
Frequency modulation.
There, all kinds of.
Right. So that's just, we tend to throw the acronyms around here. So I've got about.
I do all the time.
Yeah, we all do. But we've got about 10,000 of them up there. So hopefully, if you find some you don't know, then mm-hmm. please feel free to send us an email or go into the forums and let us know.
Put it out there.
There's a problem. But that's the autoresponder. Don't bother to ask a question on that line because nobody listens to it. It's automagic. And it'll just come back and say, I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
I should say, I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Listen to Soundbites.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I may have to change it to
tune in to Soundbites Saturdays from 12 to 2.
Yep. But yeah, so you'll be able to get your acronyms from the acronym finder.
Well, you're pushing different things. I want to throw in another plug here. I'm doing Thursday night again this coming Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob has been gracious enough to allow me to come in on Thursday nights, folks, and getting quite the crowd. And folks listening, and I really appreciate it. I've been getting some text messages and IMs and a number of folks calling the show, liking what I'm playing. So I really appreciate it. And again, if you get a chance, I'm on again this coming Thursday from 6 to 9. Give it a listen. Like I say, I kind of – Rob keeps going, where are you digging this stuff out of? And I just tell him, it's in the library. I just happen to find a good section, and folks are loving it. So, you know, tune in, have some fun, and like I say, call in your request because I'm having a blast with it. And, you know, can't ask for any more.
Exactly. All right, Apple has sent out a media invite for an event March 2nd at 10 a.m. at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. The image on the invitation shows a giant 2 covering what appears to be an iPad. The 2 is in the style of Apple's calendar software, but the hint of a second version of the iPad is none too subtle. Apple's next-generation iPad, unofficially known as iPad 2, will be unveiled March 2nd at the Yerba Buena Vista Center for the Arts in San Francisco, according to a report. The first iPad was revealed at a media event, also at the Yerba Buena Center, by Apple CEO Steve Jobs on January 27th, 2010. Yes, just over a year ago. And then it hit the stores last April. You've only had the iPad in your hand since last April. Think about that. So far, Apple has sold more than 15 million iPads. The report offered no word on whether or not Jobs would attend the unveiling of the next iPad. In January, Jobs announced he was taking an indefinite leave of absence to deal with health issues. Jobs remains CEO, but has handed most of his day-to-day duties to Chief Operating Officer Tim Cook. Jobs did attend a dinner with President Obama last week, along with a handful of other California tech leaders. But what's important now is the question of the iPad 2. It is widely expected to be thinner and lighter than the current version and add new features, such as a front-facing camera for video chatting using Apple's FaceTime software, as well as a possible SD card slot, yes, dear God, please, and camera on the back for shooting video and photos. Whenever it arrives, the iPad 2 will face a much more competitive market than when the first iPad hit retail outlets. Google is rolling out its first version of its Android operating system designed for tablets called Honeycomb on Thursday with the Motorola Zoom XOOM. By the end of the year, Honeycomb is likely to be on dozens of tablets. ViewSonic, the monitor people, will have one. Lenovo will have one. Samsung has one. Name the manufacturer, they're all going to have them. Hewlett-Packard showed off the HP TouchPad recently that runs on the HP WebOS software. Research in Motion is prepping to release the BlackBerry Playbook tablet very soon. So our question to you, are you waiting for the iPad 2 or looking for an Android tablet or the BlackBerry tablet or HP's WebOS? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will talk about that because we are always if not actually delighted.
One thing they haven't done for the iPad?
What?
They do them for the phones and everything else. I'm surprised they haven't come up with different snap-on skins.
Oh, there's hundreds of them.
Oh, there are? Oh, yeah.
We sell them at our store.
Oh, I did not know that. I just never see. I've seen a lot of folks with the iPads.
It sort of goes back with the phone, too. It's so thin and so light that you don't want to put this extra big thing on it. In fact, my iPad's in a leather folio that you've seen me carry.
Okay.
There's acrylic and rubber snap-ons. There's leather folios. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of companies that make a folio with a keyboard built in. So there's a Bluetooth keyboard, turns the iPad basically into a netbook.
Because I know there's a number of them for like the iTouch and that type of stuff. You can get it. It's super heavy duty that if it falls, it's heavy rubber that it will sit there and absorb a lot of the impact. Right. Yeah, it adds a little more bulk. But if you happen to drop yours, you know.
The,
it's like,
the fully encased leather folios add that kind of protection.
I think it was called Frog or something.
iFrogs with iFrog? A Z is one of the manufacturers, yeah.
Okay. Yep. One of the interesting things is I have an Android phone, and it uses Gorilla Glass. So I never worry about scratching it, but you still have to worry about dropping it. I don't believe the iPad or the iPhone uses Gorilla Glass. So they're a little more susceptible, to scratching. So that's why people put pads on. But Steve is right. If you're going to buy something that's super light and super easy to carry, not for somebody like me who's severely arthritic, but for regular people, super easy to carry, then why would you want to bulk it up with all that other stuff?
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's even going to be harder to do now if the iPad 2 comes out with cameras and all that other stuff.
Just like every new iPod that comes out, all the case manufacturers have to change their case design.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly.
You can also get a scratch-proof acrylic film, a very, very thin plastic film to cover the iPad to protect the screen from scratches and scuffs. A lot of people do that if they're not going to put it in a case, because then you also you get that screen protection on the front of it. Which
well,
is
I have
the
that
most,
on my iTouch, too.
Yeah.
That and on my phone, because, you know, in and out of my pockets, and that can get scratched very easily. And the films, those are always a pain in the butt.
To get them on, yeah.
Well, yeah, because you're trying to... I went through three of them to get them on my iTouch.
There's one company.
Because trying to get it clean and not have any
bubbles,
specks of dust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had, first time, I go to get it on, and I thought I had it really clean. I did the wipe and got it. And I go to put it on, I get it all the way down, and I'm looking good, you know, all the way around the edge, and all of a sudden it looked dead center. Right in the middle, dead center, is this little dust speck that wouldn't bubble out.
Yep.
And I hit it. Rip that sucker off it.
One of the brands we sell, it comes in a two-pack. So you can practice on the first one, and then by the second one, you'll have it right.
I went through two.
And some people say,
pack.
Oh, I can use it on two iPads. You can, yeah, but...
You're that good.
No, I went through two of those two-packs, and I got one backup just in case.
Well, see, I had one for a while, but I took it off. But while I was using it, it was very easy to get on and off. Very, very easy. I just hand it to my wife and say, honey... She's an artist. She has the eye. She has the steadiest hands I've ever seen. She just said, oh, okay, that's easy enough. And here's this little, they give you this little paddle to brush the...
Some of them give you a little...
Air bubbles out, and she said there aren't any air bubbles. Oh, okay. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, honey.
Some of them give you a little spritzer can so your finger oil doesn't get under the pad as you're putting it down.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, she didn't have any problem with that, yeah.
Well, now I know what to do. Come over to your house and say, Elaine, put
Elaine,
this on.
Here, please put this on.
Or when she drops off the coffee, you know.
Exactly.
Just Elaine, would you do this for me?
Yeah. Come in the back room.
All right. I'll mark that down.
Yep. Write it down. Yep. She'll do that for you. That's not a problem. That's absolutely not a problem. She's very good at that stuff. She's got the steady hands. I got to talk about this one. Apparently, spending 50 minutes with a, that's 50 minutes, with a cell phone plastered to your ear is enough to change brain cell activity in the part of the brain closest to the antenna. But whether that causes any harm is not clear, scientists at the National Institutes of Health said on Tuesday, adding that the study will likely not settle recurring concerns of a link between cell phones and brain cancer. What the study showed is that glucose metabolism, which is a sign of brain activity, increases in the brain of people who were exposed to a cell phone in the area closest to the antenna. The study was meant to examine how the brain reacts to electromagnetic fields caused by wireless phone signals. Dr. Nora Volkow of the National Institutes of Health said she was surprised that the weak electromagnetic radiation from cell phones could affect brain activity, but she said the findings do not shed any light on whether cell phones cause cancer. Do not shed any light on that. The study does not in any way indicate that, she said. What the study does show is the human brain is sensitive to electromagnetic radiation from cell phone exposures.
Use of the devices has increased dramatically, of course, since they were introduced in the early to mid-80s, with about 5 billion, that's billion with a B, mobile phones now in use worldwide. Some studies have linked cell phone exposure to an increased risk of brain cancers, but a large study by the World Health Organization was inconclusive. Volko's team studied 47 people who had brain scans while a cell phone was turned on for 50 minutes and another while a cell was turned off. Now, while there was no overall change in brain metabolism, they found a 7% increase in brain metabolism in the region closest to the cell phone antenna where the phone was on, when the phone was on. Experts said the results were intriguing, but urged that they be interpreted with caution. Much has to be done to further investigate and understand these effects. So it's just an increase in brain activity.
At my age, that might be good.
Which might be good. Exactly my point. So our question to you. Do you talk for 50 minutes a day with your cell phone up to your ear? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966.
Heck, I can do that in one phone call.
You're not kidding. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
So I can't blame that on that. Brain farts.
Yeah. The doctor says, Nick, you could open a side business at the coffee shop putting on the screens. That would actually work.
There you go.
Yeah. The but yeah, so I rarely make phone calls anymore, honestly.
Really?
And when I do, I'm almost always hands free. And that's usually I have the phone mounted on the dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just talk and I hear the sound coming out of the speakers. So
I had the phone, you know, I've got the phone thing in the car. But then you got to sign up for that whole OnStar system. I can't have the phone separate.
Right.
Which I think stinks.
Well, they're bundling.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said the heck with that for what they want to pay, you know, so my car can email me and let me know that my tire pressure and everything else is good. No,
yeah,
I don't.
No.
I just went out and bought myself a Bluetooth, and I use the Bluetooth when folks call. I just hit, you know, up alongside my ear there and turn it on, and I can talk to folks hand-free. Go right along and not pay that stupid monthly fee. I understand the bundling, but there's so many other car manufacturers now that separate that. Or they have the Bluetooth device in it so you can sync your phone to the thing and not be tied to it.
Right. So I just
now, a lot of the car companies are really getting big into the apps, too. You can get an SDK, a software development kit for your car, and put an app on your iPhone or your Android phone to check the oil pressure and start the engine and unlock the doors.
Oh, yeah, there's that one commercial.
Yeah.
Honey, could you do that one more time? Yeah, she's getting on the plane.
Yeah, right.
All right, this is the last time the guys are standing there watching the car turn on that, and she's locking and unlocking the doors, and he goes, all right, she's just having fun now.
Now, my friend of mine got a new car that has a proximity sensor on the keys. So she walks up to the car, the doors unlock, and the lights come on because the keys are in her pocket.
Nice.
So, which is handy when your arms are full at grocery store or whatnot. Yeah. You know, the doors. The next step is if the door's actually opened for you. They unlock now, but
the one technology I think is really going to take off, though, and I forget what manufacturer's doing it, but in the case of a car crash,
yeah,
it unlocks the doors, turns off the engine,
turns on the flashers,
and turns on the flashers.
Yep. And calls 911 if you've got the...
Yeah, but the key thing, though, is unlocking the doors.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be able to do that.
Because there's pretty amazing stuff.
There's the picture of it. There was, at CES a couple of weeks ago, GM was showing off a prototype of their autonomous vehicle, the ENV. That's the only picture of it. I can find some better pictures. And it's a two-person autonomous vehicle. It's kind of based on a Segway because it balances itself on two wheels. So you can program a destination and it drives itself, or you can drive it yourself as well. And all the cars talk to each other, the vehicles talk to each other, and so they know the speeds and directions and avoids collision, so it prevents you from running into things.
Nice.
Although the guy said as a driver, you can override the sensor and run into something if you want to.
Yeah, right. That's nice to know. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We're It's 19 minutes after the hour, so we've got about 40 minutes left to chit-chat with you, so feel free to give us a call. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benrick.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We not only take your calls at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, and toll free at 1-800-790-0415, but we also take them on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Bill from Rochester wrote, my old XP home server, home version, hello, hi. Bill wrote better than that, I'm just not reading it well. My old XP home version XP PC, God in heaven, my old XP home version PC has the capacity of 4 hard disk drives. I was thinking it would be a good home server to use on my home network. My other PCs are running Windows 7 and see an access to shared drives and files in the XP machine. My concern is just how safe is this for a home network? I do not have any remote access features in use, but how safe am I from hackers? Please give me your thoughts on this idea, Bill.
Well, it is a little more dangerous when you're running a server because you're allowing people to get into your server. The trick is setting up. I want these people to get in, but these people not to get in.
If you're inside your firewall.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
if you have, for example, cable or DSL, and so you are all entirely inside your own network.
With your own private router.
With your own router. Inside that. So you've got your cable or DSL line coming into your home, and the modem is on that. And then off of that, you have a router to which all your computers are hooked. Then it is perfectly safe to do this.
But what I was thinking on, and kind of hesitating there, which you've said before, if you're going to allow them in, make the passwords really hard that the average person wouldn't be able to crack into. And if they're not willing to abide by that, then you just don't let them in.
And nothing related to your name, your birthday, your pet
Like you
name.
Say, I love yours in that you come up with a different phrase.
Right.
And even throw in a couple numbers. Uppercase, lowercase, and you substitute numbers, say, for letters and that type of stuff. Make it really jump. I think in there, if you do that, and set up the security.
And
then,
you definitely want to make sure that the master, the root password, the administrator password in XP is seriously set, although XP is easy to break. But if it's all behind your own router, and this is the key, not the router that's built into the cable modem or into the DSL modem, but you off of that, you have a separate router.
Second line of defense.
Right. If you do that, you're safe enough to set up your own home router. And in terms of the power of the machine, frankly, servers don't need a lot of power.
No.
That's why you can run so many services on a single server.
Mm-hmm.
They don't require a lot of power if all your, for example, you want one place for your music, one place for all your pictures, one place for all your files. That's the way to do it. Now, again, like I say, you want to make sure those things are all backed up somewhere else. But in terms of actually keeping them live on your network for everyone in your home to use, as long as you've got it set up the way I said with that extra router, you should be okay.
What about cloud?
Keeping it on the cloud is certainly a possibility. There are places that will give you cloud storage. So the next question is, who do you trust?
Yeah.
Right? So maybe you trust Amazon Web Services. Maybe you trust Google. Maybe you trust whatever, whatever. But that's who you trust. He's already got the machine.
Yeah, so he's
Already got it set up in his own home network for everybody to see it. So as long as he's got that extra router in between him and the cable or DSL router, he should be fine.
And like I say, I would, again, my point of view on it, and going back to what you've said countless times, is mandate that the passwords are unique. And if they, you know, and periodically check them. Don't always take people for the word because, right. you know, if you give them the capability or if you just say, here, I'm setting this. This is your password. If you want to use it, you don't give them the capabilities to change it.
Right.
And that's going to be your password. And then that way you've got a list of it and you know it's going to be
right.
tight.
Right.
Then you have no worries.
Right. And, well, the other thing is XP is not as secure as Windows 7. If someone were to get to your home. And had access to the machine itself, they could get into it.
He's
but
also
if they could. Well, oh, yeah. You've got all the
I won't even go
already,
into that.
Right.
He's also talking about using the regular XP file sharing. Microsoft has their Windows Server that has more features, more security options, but
right.
it's ridiculously expensive. And that sort of brings up an announcement that Apple made this week. The next version of the Mac OS, Mac OS X Lion, they are including Lion Server. So the Lion server used to be $1,000, and then it was $500, and for an unlimited client compared to I think Microsoft Server is $5,000 for five clients. So
right.
it's $1,000 per user.
Right.
Apple server is $1,000 for unlimited users. Then it was $500 for unlimited users. Then what was interesting is they were bundling it with a $700 computer for $1,000. So in essence, it was about a $300 for this for unlimited server.
That's actually a good deal.
And now it's going to be built in to OS X Lion. When you're installing it, you pick whether you want the server version or the client version. So it's getting more and more common these days to have a home server. You might have an iTunes media server, Windows media server. You know, Microsoft does have their home server, which is a little more affordable. So you can send your music and your movies to your television. It's very common now to have multiple computers and now multiple mobile devices. You know, you may have rented a movie on your iPad or you're downloading YouTube on your iPhone and be able to send that through your home server to your television. And it's now integrating easier and easier for average and novice users to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just click a button and say, share my iTunes.
Well, then that's the thing. Networks are becoming such a big part of average homes. I mean, before, back in the day, you know, you had one, maybe two computers. Now, I go to homes, and yeah, they got a network, and each kid has their own computers. They got the home computer, and then mom and dad each have their own, you know, netbooks and that type of stuff that they're moving stuff around and that. And
it becomes a trickle down. It used to be computers were so expensive, a family could only afford one, and you kept it until the thing died and couldn't be repaired anymore. You know, now every couple of years, you know, dad buys a new computer, passes it down to mom, who passes it down to the kid who passes it down to the next
well
kid.
Even a netbook netbook you can get for a couple $100
right
and take it all throughout the house and do simple stuff like surfing the net and doing a paper up for school or whatever. I mean, they're so affordable, and like you say, if you lose it, oh well, no biggie,
right, as long as you've got all the data backed up and nothing private on it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But absolutely,
one other thing I like to mention here while we're on talking about different topics, and you know, you hear us talking about various topics all the time. You can also come to the Soho show and ask us questions. We're going to be at the Soho show, which is going to be March 30th. That's the small office, home office show that's been in Rochester for years. And Nick, Steve, and I are going to be at the Soho show. Again, that's March 30th. So if you have other questions, you know, you can't get to Saturdays and that, maybe your schedule doesn't permit it and you podcast us and really like to meet us face to face, you know, we're going to be at that show. If you get a chance, stop on down to the 10th annual small office business office show, March 30th at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center.
That's a Wednesday.
Yep. We will be there in
over 100 display booths of products and services.
Mm-hmm. And we will be there to answer your questions and just chit-chat.
It says there's a free reception at 3.
Really?
And this is on the public website, so it must be.
Must be free, and it must be pretty big.
Public, yeah.
And I believe to get into the show, it is free also. They just have to register?
Well, there are tickets you can get for free. I think day of the show, there is a fee to get in, but they'll have a pile of free tickets laying there. They usually do in the past.
Right, yeah, right.
But if you go to the website, sohorochester.com, you can request free tickets.
Yeah.
And all the exhibitors are giving away free tickets as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and why don't we give them the date again?
That is March 30th, and I believe it starts at 9 o'clock and goes to around 4. So So, you know, if you get a chance, it's an all-day affair, so you can either stop in the mornings. We get a lot of folks in the past that have stopped at their lunchtime. Stop in and say hello, you know, and actually meet us face-to-face. It's a good time, you know, and a lot of great stuff. I can remember, though, back in the day, it used to be on two floors.
Yeah.
And didn't it go, I want to say, did it go more than one day or was it 2 days?
Yeah, it used to be a couple of days.
A couple of 3 days, actually.
Yeah.
Ooh, the pig roast is there.
A couple of years ago,
barbecue
I got,
is there. So just wander around through all the food food vendors.
Well, yeah, they came over and visited us. You knew one of the guys at the barbecue place, and they wound up bringing us over some great pulled pork.
Yeah, it was delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to it. It should be a great show. We'd love to see you there. That's March 30th. But before March 30th.
Wait a minute. I got to let folks know, too, and you never know. This could happen, folks. It was last year's show when Nick, our booth was very close to the Verizon store.
Yes, it was.
And Nick happened to go over to this young lady who became his best friend.
My best friend,
and Jean. Got your droid.
Got my droid.
Are we going to be upgrading at all if their booth is?
I doubt it this year. Would love to get a new one, but I don't know that that's in the cards at the moment.
People complain about
go down and talk to her again. You threw your charm on, and she took care of you.
If Jean is there, I will at least go down and thank her again.
People are wondering about the iPhone 4 that just hit Verizon with the iPhone 5 expected this summer. Every year for the last 4 years, they've come up with an iPhone. It's even worse in the Android world. You buy a new phone, and next month there's a better one. At least with iPhones, it's a year between models.
Yeah.
Although that's the bad thing, too. It's a year between models.
They're only coming out from one company. That's why.
Yep. And I just found on the Soho Rochester website, you can print your own free ticket.
Nice.
Cool.
So that all works out. But, yeah, I did. I got my phone last year. I'm looking forward to the show itself, although I probably will not upgrade my phone. Although, God knows, I'd love one of the newer one of the newer phones.
You can always wander down there and talk. It doesn't cost anything to talk.
It doesn't cost anything to talk. It costs a lot to get a new phone, but it doesn't cost anything to talk.
But you were going to go on to another topic.
I probably was, but I don't remember what it was.
I think it was probably that we're going to be doing it.
Yes, that's the 30th, but before the 30th comes March 12th. That's the way numbers work.
What's going on then?
Well, interestingly, March 12th.
Are you busy that day?
I am very busy that day because I'll be flipping flapjacks.
Ooh.
And why will I be flipping flapjacks? Because I'll be standing next to you while you're flipping flapjacks.
There you go.
We are going to be here at Greece Olympia High School over in the cafeteria because it is the first, and I suspect annual, pancake breakfast. You get all the pancakes, juice, sausages you want. From 10 a.m. to noon, you get to listen to the Polka Guys do their show live right there in front of us. From noon to 2, Sound Bites will be there live. Now, we're only serving till 1, but you can hang around till 2 while we finish the show. And like I said, it's all the pancakes, all the juice, all the sausages you want. Kids 5 and under are free. And the whole thing is only going to cost you not even one arm or one leg.
What may it cost?
It will only cost a mere $5 American per
person. Get out of Dodge.
I am in Dodge, and I am staying in Dodge. $5 per person.
We'd probably even take $5 Canadian.
You think we would? That's not up to us.
Yeah.
Isn't the Canadian dollar worth more now?
Yeah, that's true. It is. So, it's $5 to get in the door, and it's all you can eat. Come down and sit with us, chit-chat. We'll be glad to talk to you. We'll be glad to answer your questions on the air or just chit-chat about what you want
to
chit-chat about.
And we're going to have great giveaways. And the other thing that folks have got to remember, we're doing this, and all proceeds go to help support this radio station. We are member-supported. In other words, we come to you folks twice a year to ask you to help for your support because that's how we stay on the air, and we bring you sound bites and all the other great programs that we have throughout the year on Jazz 90.1. So, you know, again, by coming to this, you're showing your support for a great radio station, and Rob taking the initiative to, pull sound bites in and make us part of the family, which we're coming up on 2 years this June. And we can't thank him enough because, you know, they've done a lot of great things. We're getting a full 2 hours of sound bites every Saturday. Literally every Saturday. We're not being bumped for anything. for you, just yeah, for no your kidding. Folks to be here and answer your computer questions. So, you know, again, that's just showing Rob how much you appreciate him for bringing us over here to Jazz 90.1.
Now, there are a couple of ways you can get tickets. You can, of course, call 585-966-2660 during the week. Or, of course, you can go to jazz901.org. The very first thing on the front page. Click here to purchase tickets. It's a secure purchase, only $5 a person. When you sign up, indicate, please, whether you sign up online or live, please indicate that these tickets are on behalf of Soundbites, because we do have a small competition going, friendly competition, with our friends on the polka bandstand.
Dude, they're kicking our butt. You know how many they took in today?
26.
Yeah.
26.
Yeah.
Just today.
Yeah, just today.
You folks out there listening, apparently you're not doing your part. We need you to come to this thing. It's only $5. Come on, seriously? It's $5.
Yeah, you know, and they got it, you know, to save face. You know, I mean, we've come so close even during the fund drives. This close to getting them. And yeah. Right now, this first time up, I mean, they're handing it to us. They're handing it to us. And, you know, I hate to say it, but the polka folks are coming out. The polka dots are doing it. And love to be able to say no. You know, our soundbite listeners are out there, and they support us 100%.
But right now, we're hanging our heads.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot hold up our heads in front of the polka guys. But look, it's all you can eat. Pancakes, sausage, orange juice, coffee. Meet the Polka Bandstand Show guys, Ray Serafin and Al Malutis.
They do a great job.
The Soundbites host, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Nick Francesco will be doing broadcasting both shows live from the breakfast. You can come and shake our hands. You can come and ask us questions. You can come and just sit down and make funny faces at us while we're on the air. See if you can break us up. I dare you.
That means I don't have to be in here. They're going to let me go.
They're going to let you.
Away from the board? That means Linda.
Linda always breaks me up.
All right, that means we can put the camera in here and let Linda be on camera, too.
Perfect.
We'll
have the camera all set up for Linda.
We'll bring another camera for the other room.
Yeah.
We'll bring another camera to the other room.
We'll have Linda there so everybody can see Linda help us out when she fills in for us.
Yep, she's going to be here on the... Is somebody going to bring this poor woman over some pancakes? She's going to be sitting here...
We'll take care of her.
Absolutely.
Hey, gotta.
Cheese and crackers, poor Linda. We need to... Right, no cheese, no crackers, just pancakes, juice, coffee, sausages. Right.
Ooh.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we've got George from Greece on the line. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Fellas, I have a desire to build a library of video clips. They could be from a few seconds to maybe a couple of minutes long. And the source of the material would be off from broadcast TV, recorded onto a DVD recorder. And so far, I've had some experience working with a Toshiba DVD video recorder and just taking those discs and playing them into my laptop. And I can play back and see the video as one would normally expect to do that. Now, the question comes how to store that information on the computer hard drive. And I've tried to do this with some degree of success, but I find some files which have unusual names. And for each video recording that I carry forward, when it records onto the hard drive, I find three files, one with an extension of BUP, one IFO, and one VOB. And one of those seems to carry the video information, the second carries a menu, and the third can't be opened because the Windows can't identify what program was used to write the file.
Yeah, that's all part of the video object created using the MPEG-2 standard on a video DVD.
So it's part of the MPEG-2,
Yeah, it's part of a video DVD standard. And if you're not using video DVDs, then you can save it, record it as a single file in either QuickTime or AVI or MPEG-4 or any of the standard video files.
I see. Okay, so I can get it down to one file that will contain all that information.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a way that I could get a thumbnail for each of the files rather than to work from a text title? I'd like to see...
Well, you can only get a thumbnail for the video file.
Yeah, and that's the one I'd be interested in. From what Steve just said, it would all be in one file anyway.
Right.
So is there a program that would display those in kind of a tiled format? To pick the one that I want to work with.
The Mac does that automatically. Doesn't Windows generate thumbnails automatically?
Yeah, but it might not do it for VOB files.
Yeah.
No, it definitely won't do it for VOB because those are compressed files designed to play on a DVD player.
Okay. So if I get over onto, what was the preferred format again for a Windows machine?
Well, the generic video format these days is usually MPEG-4, mm-hmm. often with the H.264 compression. But some of the older video standards are AVI or WMV or even the QuickTime MOV.
And is there kind of a layman's book that I could read from to get some background in these areas?
Just Google it.
Wikipedia, yeah.
Google. You can probably even YouTube find different things, give you an education on, you know, converting files and everything else. I mean, I just Google, and when I hit, because I had a number of AVI files that I wanted to convert to MP4s.
And a lot of times...
And there was a utility out there to do it.
The different codecs for audio compression and video compression are weird. So there's another video player called VideoLAN. The VLC player from VideoLAN that often plays some of the weird video formats you download from the internet. Now, you said you're recording these from broadcast television.
Mm-hmm.
What are you using to record it with?
It's a Toshiba video recorder, DVD video recorder.
Oh, so so that's why you're getting VOBs, because you're making a DVD video.
That would be correct.
Yeah, if you skip that whole step, you can record directly into your computer as a an MPEG video.
Did he say FLVs?
No, FLV is a flash video.
Yeah.
No, I didn't say FLV.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to check.
You can get a video recording card for the computer, and it records it directly into the computer, and you don't have to go through the DVD step.
Now, you're probably going to tell me that the ability to get this all pre-scheduled and have the computer turn on when I'm not there to watch it, you're probably going to tell me that's all available.
No,
yes.
Not turn the computer on.
Oh, yeah.
No, sure.
I mean turn on the recording.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
the recording, yes. The
yeah,
there's
recording,
a
yeah.
Probably one of the easiest ones is the Elgato ITV products. And then, Hopage makes one also. ATI has several, AMD now has their all-in-wonder video cards. It's a video display card and a TV card in one unit. But if all you want to do is add a video recording to your existing computer, then the ITV products from Elgato are really easy to use. Comes with a program guide that you set for recording. It allows remote recording, so if you're not at home and you remember you forgot to set up something to record, you log onto the internet and it can record it for you. It sets your recording at home to do the recording.
And the video card you're describing, then, it would require a cable connection into the computer.
It's a USB connection into the computer, and then it's either an antenna or your digital coax coming into that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like enough to get started with. Let me ask one more time, though. I'm not one who likes to particularly read off the web or off a video display. Is there, a book, a simple book by dummies or something kind of comparable to that?
Again,
I don't know of one, I'm afraid.
Well, Google it. Yeah. Google to see if there's any, you know, how-to books.
That's what I wanted. Thank you.
Yeah, just Google it. I mean, there's usually dummies for this and dummies for that. I mean, they put so many of them out there. You know, it's unbelievable. So that help
sure.
you out?
That helps me out.
All right, sir. Have a go.
I'm sure each of the companies that sell the video products have their own own books for their own programs.
Well, one program I can tell the listeners that I use a lot, you know, because if you're doing the YouTubes, you know how sometimes, depending on your stream and that, it can be kind of choppy. You're trying to watch it, and it'll stop because it's got to do the buffering. Well, I've used this one program called FLV, and you install it, and it'll put this little icon on your browser. So when you're watching a YouTube, all I do is sit there and say, capture this, put it on my desktop. It downloads the whole YouTube into this little file. So then I can watch it when I want, and it's one continuous stream.
Since most of the YouTube videos are Flash wrapped H.264s, FLV is the file extension for Flash video.
Yep.
I use a website called Keep It, or keepvid.com that does the same thing. You put a YouTube URL in it, and it lets you save it in different formats. You could save it as a low-res cell phone format or a high-res MPEG-4 format.
Well, I'm doing it right now for a lot of these. I'm trying to get just the instrumental lines for various songs. And, you know, they'll have the video along with it. So I can then download it, and then I take the FLV file, convert it to MP4 so I can put it on my iTouch, and I plug that into my amp and just play it. And it works out great because then it, you know, I'm getting the whole thing without the buffering and all this other stuff. It's a great new program. And for folks that want to capture some of their video, if they want to go, and you can stop and start it too.
Yep.
You know, it's the other good feature of it. So if you got a particular YouTube that you want to capture and see it over and over, or it's an instructional type of thing, you can stop it, do what you want, and then continue it, and constantly replay it, and not have to worry about the buffering from the web. So it's FLV. It's a very good one. I would recommend folks grabbing it.
Nice. Remember who it's by? So FLV is too generic a term.
No, all I do is do, you know, Google, and it took me to the FLV download it.
166 million hits on Flash players.
Yeah, and you can I download it, install it, and what it'll do is along on your toolbar, you're going to see like these three balls in your browser bar that'll be spinning. There's a down arrow. You click on that, and it'll show you the current Flash video that's being played. You can sit there and say save it, and I have it save it to my desktop.
I think it might be FLV.com.
And it'll open up the downloader, and you'll see it, you know, downloading. Once it's done, it puts it on your desktop, and you're good to go. You don't have to worry whether it's buffering or not.
I do the same thing with the, KeepVid.
Yeah.
It puts a little Java applet in your toolbar, and whenever a video is playing, you click on it, and it saves it for you.
And it's sweet. You know, it does a really good job.
Yep. So. There are extensions for Chrome browser that do much that same sort of thing. So
And then again, if you going from any format to another, there's so many free utilities out there.
But you got to be careful because there's some really bad pay ones that have come out under dozens of different similar names.
Yeah.
And whenever you do a search for these video converters, you'll find all these crappy ones first, and they tend to spam forums all the time.
Yeah,
and they've gotten a little bit sneaky. They'll spam a forum with a question, and then spam back with the answer selling their crappy product.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We tend to see that a little too much, I'm afraid.
Yeah. They're trying to get around rules about posting spam. Yeah. Or I'm just answering somebody's question. Well, it's the question you posted, so you can post your own commercial advertisement.
Exactly. All right. I do want to remind everybody that if you find a three-letter acronym that you don't know the answer to, you can always get the help from the Soundbites autoresponder, 585-348-8255. Send help to that, and it'll send back all the things that you can do. That's probably the easiest way to deal with it, 585-348-8255. So if you want some sort of auto response, you can get that. It's been a lot of fun setting that up. Frankly, it uses Google Voice, and does some stuff off of that. So I've had fun programming that, playing with it, setting it up. Shockingly easy to do. Google really is going to own the world, not just because they have bucket loads of cash, but also because they make things so easy to do. I'm actually very, very impressed by them. All righty, folks. That's it. We are done for another week. You have once again, for no discernible reason, wasted 2 hours of your life listening to us. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts that you have done so. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco.
You've just listened to another installment of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We will see you back here next week. Please do not forget about the pancake breakfast on March 12th. Please don't forget about the Soho show on the 30th. We are Soundbites. The German show is coming up next. George is here.
Come in here. Has George made it yet?
George came in. Not a problem. Linda would be brushing up on her high school German right now. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. George is here.